On this edition, Bill Plotkin joins me talking about Wild Mind, a field guide to the human psyche. I'm Richard Brendan, and the conversation begins now. What must we do to create lasting positive change in our individual lives and communities? How might we re-enliven and perhaps revolutionize our understanding of what it means to be human, offer our magnificence to the world, and transform our contemporary Western cultures? Well, in a new book, Wild Mind, A Field Guide to Human Psyche, Bill Plotkin proposes compelling answers to these vital questions of our time. In this book, Plotkin introduces a map of psychological wholeness rooted in nature's own map of wholeness. The book offers an elaborate field guide to becoming fully human by cultivating the four facets of the self and discovering both the limitations and gifts of our wounded, fragmented, and shadowed subpersonalities. Bill Plotkin, Ph.D., is a depth psychologist, wilderness guide, and agent of cultural evolution. As founder of Western Colorado's Animas Valley Institute in 1981, he's guided thousands of women and men through nature-based initiatory passages, including a contemporary Western adaptation of the Pan Culture Vision Quest. Previously, he's been a research psychologist, rock musician, psychotherapist, and whitewater river guide. In 1979, on a solo winter ascent of the Adirondack Peak, Bill experienced a call to adventure, leading him to abandon academia in search of his true calling. Bill's the author of Soulcraft, Crossing into the Mysteries of Nature and Psyche, Nature and the Human Soul, Cultivating Wholeness and Community in a Fragmented World, and now this new book. It's a book about healing, growing whole, and cultural transformation. Bill has a doctorate in psychology from the University of Colorado at Boulder, and he joins us today from his home in Southwest Colorado. Bill, welcome to the program.
Thanks very much.
I love this new book that you have out now. To get started, I'd like to share a quote from the introduction of Wild Mind, and you write this: "We must dare again to dream the impossible and to romance the world, to feel and honor our kinship with all species and habitats, to embrace the troubling wisdom of paradox, and to shape ourselves into visionaries with the artistry to revitalize our enchanted and endangered world." I've read that several times, and it inspires me each time I read it. Can you comment on that paragraph, what it means to you? And it really sets the tone with the other things you wrote in the introduction for the book.
Yes, it speaks to cultivating our human wholeness, mm-hmm. our indigenous capacities that we each are born with, yeah. By virtue of being humans. And it's something that our contemporary mainstream Western cultures have pretty much dropped the ball on in the last several hundred years at least. So we're each born with this capacity for cultivating our human magnificence. And it's something that we need very, very much at this difficult time. And I would say that our contemporary mainstream cultures have actually suppressed the what I call four facets of our wholeness, mm-hmm. and that paragraph you read, or that sentence, is alluding to the four facets or dimensions of our wholeness, mm-hmm. and I'm trying to find that in my own book here, so I can tell you what those are.
Well, and it also reminded me, we have a lot of discussion on this show about sacred activism, something I've even called social change artistry, mm-hmm. but taking, you know, this fusion of the inner work of heart with outer service in the world, but also being empowered and powered by love and compassion in making these profound changes that must be made in the world today.
We do have to make profound changes, and what we need most, you could say, to do that is for as many people as possible. Mm-hmm. in the Western world to access and cultivate these four facets of our human wholeness. And mm-hmm. so, okay, I found that sentence, and mm-hmm. the first one is, daring again to dream the impossible and to romance the world. This refers to what I think of as the West facet of our human wholeness, because I've mapped this map, our human psyches, onto the four cardinal directions. Mm-hmm. And the West part of us is the dreamer, the capacity we have for very deep imagination, and also for deep romance. Romance is our capacity to be allured by aspects of the world, including other humans, but the world more generally, to romance the world. And if you can imagine, most people in the Western world carrying on a very conscious love affair with the world, we would all be acting very different in our day-to-day lives, and maybe we'd have different kind of jobs, and we certainly would be more likely to be activists and
yes.
making a difference in this world.
Yes. Yes, because when you're a lover of life and in all of life, then you can't help but want to protect life.
Exactly. And the second phrase in that sentence you read is, we must dare again to feel and honor our kinship with all species and habitats.
Mm-hmm.
This alludes to this, what I call the south facet of our human wholeness, which is, I call it the wild indigenous one. We all have that as a capacity. We're all born with that. Again, the Western world tends to suppress that. But those of us who are alive to our innate wildness naturally experience a kinship with all species and all habitats. We experience ourselves somatically and viscerally as human animals.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a caring for all life of, in all its forms.
Yeah. And again, it's also about embracing, as you worded it, the troubling wisdom of paradox.
Exactly. This refers to the East facet of ourselves, which I think of as the innocent or the sage.
Mm-hmm.
And even the name, the innocent sage, suggests a paradox. A lot of people might say or wonder, how can someone be both innocent and wise at the same time? And the innocent sage, the East facet of ourselves, responds and says, well, how could it be otherwise?
That, yeah.
that both innocence and wisdom is a kind of simple, open purity, uncorrupted openness to the world. Wisdom, of course, being something different from knowledge. Knowledge being more in the domain of the North facet. But the East is has this big picture view of what's going on, doesn't get lost in the minutiae of everyday life, and can has this innocent appreciation and clear way of perceiving the world, which is, again, these are capacities that we're all very much in need of honing.
Yeah, yeah. In the introduction of the book, you talk about how mainstream Western culture is alienated from the greater Earth community. You write, the ways we think, feel, perceive, imagine, and act have arisen in attunement to the rhythms of the day and the turning of the seasons in an intimate relationship with myriad other life forms and forces. Can you talk about this alienation from the Earth community and why it's critical that we begin to mend this and reconnect?
Yeah, again, it goes back to our contemporary mainstream Western cultures, which have we're educated in such a way that we're, in most contexts these days, of course, mm-hmm. it's beginning to change, but we're educated in such a way that we don't really feel and experience our kinship with the rest of the world, and that leads us to experiencing or using the world as something like a warehouse or a place just of, well, we speak of the world as a resource and that we use the world, and as opposed to the species and habitats being relatives, essentially, and that we have the opportunity and responsibility to have a sacred relationship with all of the world. And so it's just not possible to treat the world the way mainstream Western cultures treat the world, in which we're using things up and degrading things and resulting in the extinction of so many species.
Mm-hmm.
The only way that's possible is to live in a culture that is somewhat blindfolded to what life actually is and somewhat narcissistic in our concerns about just taking care of ourselves. And of course, the part of the paradox there is that we end up undermining the foundations for life on the planet, which affects our own survival as well as everything else.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're listening to The Richard Brendon Show. We're bringing love to life today with depth psychologist and best-selling author Bill Plotkin. We're talking about his newest book, Wild Mind, A Field Guide to the Human Psyche. We'll be right back after a short break. Brendan, it's a joy to have Bill Plotkin on today. We're talking about his newest book, Wild Mind, A Field Guide to the Human Psyche. And Bill, in the first half of your book, you talk about the self. And you say, we must cultivate the self before we can truly heal. Can you share more about how we can cultivate the self?
Yes, by the self. And I use that word with a capital S. Mm-hmm. It's really a synonym for our human wholeness, with these four facets that we were speaking of. And in contemporary Western medicine and psychotherapy in particular, the ideal is that the psychotherapist has conscious access to their own resource, their own resources of wholeness, and they help their client heal emotionally using their own capacities, their own psychological capacities, the therapist capacities, rather. Mm-hmm. Where it has seemed to me and my colleagues and others around the world that the deepest emotional or psychological healing comes through the cultivation of our own, of the wholeness of our own psyches, with which we can embrace our wounded, fragmented, or protective parts. And it's a much deeper form of healing. So from that perspective, the first order of business in psychological healing is the cultivation of our fourfold self, our human wholeness, all four facets of it. And then when our wounded parts of our psyche show up, and they do for most everybody pretty regularly, we have our conscious access to the resources we can to embrace those parts. And rather than trying to get rid of them, which we don't want to do because every part of us has capacities and resources for living a good life, instead of trying to get rid of or suppressing any of our wounded parts, we learn to embrace them and actually love them and bring them into the fold of what we might call a more mature ego.
I notice that you associate each facet of the self with its corresponding natural directions. You've already alluded to that a little bit. I want to go a little deeper into that with the directions north, south, east, or west on your map. And by the way, the two maps I've downloaded and I carry with me now because I find them so fascinating. Map one, which is intrapersonal, and map two is interpersonal. Can you tell us the meaning of that in terms of the natural directions of the self?
Yeah, the interpersonal version of the map is simply saying that there's certain ways we relate to ourselves, our own psyches. There's certain ways we experience these facets and also these wounded parts of ourselves, and that's mm-hmm. intrapersonal, meaning within the person. And interpersonal, of course, means between one person and another. It's the way that others experience us when we are, I guess you could say, coming from or embodying these facets of wholeness or these aspects of our woundedness.
Yeah. Yeah, and although it would be great to live every moment from the self, that's often not the reality. You talk about sub-personalities as being a mode from which we function, and you put these sub-personalities into four categories. As an example, I think the North is inner critic, South, we were talking about wounded children, the East, escapists and addicts, and the West, the shadow and shadow selves. And you say that sub-personalities might be immature and wounded, but they're doing their best to help us. Can you give us some examples of these sub-personalities and how they kick in to protect us?
Yes, the North facet is a general category I call loyal soldiers.
Yeah.
This is a term that comes from the psychological discipline called psychosynthesis. And our loyal soldiers include, as you say, our inner critics, but they also include what we can call our inner flatterers, the one that try to make us feel better about ourselves, but they do so by restricting us into kind of very simple or monodimensional social roles that we might get lots of strokes from others, but it really dampens our possibilities. So as children, this is when our subpersonalities show up when we're very young, even before we become conscious. I mean, in the first couple of years, our subpersonalities, our wounded parts, show up to keep us as safe as they can. So, for example, if we're a child, if there's a child who is acting in their normal, human, magnificent wildness, and there's some aspects of that that the rest of the family is not so happy about, there'll be punishment often, and especially in the contemporary Western, not-so-enlightened parenting models. And the child will get the message that if he embodies this particular aspect of his natural wildness, that he's going to be in trouble. He might lose love, he might be punished, and so on. So what we naturally do as children is we develop this part of our psyches. Again, I call these aspects the loyal soldiers. Some aspect of our psyches that will help us restrict ourselves, limit ourselves, make ourselves small in our own experience before we get punished by someone else. It does serve us, these aspects, these loyal soldier aspects, because it keeps us safe from being punished or ostracized or humiliated or embarrassed or thrown out, etc. And so these wounded parts, or protective parts as I call them, are really a great blessing. We need them as children. We need them more in the cases where our families are less healthy and our cultures are less healthy. We need to kind of take a very small slice of the pie of ourselves and just stay in that safe zone. So as we get older and ideally more mature, we develop more resources and more capacities to be in relationship to ourselves and others. And so then when we get criticized, we have more mature ways of responding to that. And when our loyal soldiers show up, and we have gotten to a more mature place, we can learn how to not argue with them, not fight with them, but to actually to love them and to thank them. That's why we call them loyal soldiers. They are the ones that helped us survive difficult times in our earlier life. And it's more like we want to pin medals on their chests and let them know that the war of childhood survival is over. They've done their job well. And so we end up either agreeing with their criticisms or disagreeing. We just thank them for doing their best to help us. And then we demonstrate to them that we have more mature ways of taking care of ourselves using the facets of our human wholeness. And that allows the loyal soldiers and other wounded parts to calm down.
Yeah, yeah. Now, subpersonalities for the East is escapists and addicts. How do they kick in to protect us?
They kick in a number of different ways, but especially when we have experiences when we're younger that are just absolutely overwhelming emotionally, that feel like we'll be just totally devastated by the experience, or we're afraid that an experience like that is coming down the road, mm-hmm. our direction soon. Mm-hmm. And so what the escapist fanatics will do are find ways that distract us. In extreme situations, they will remove our consciousness from our own bodily experience so mm-hmm. that we're not aware of what's happening to us physically. And there's many ways of escape, social escapes and psychological escapes. Mm-hmm. But when people think of addictions, that we think of substance addictions in particular, which is just really one category. Mm-hmm. But what those substances will do is remove our consciousness from the most disturbing realm of our experiences. And also the addicts are also trying to move us into a bigger world, in some ways a more spiritual world. The problem with most addictions, the ones we call negative addictions, is that they don't really succeed at a more spiritual experience. They just end up numbing us to a whole range of our human experience.
Yeah, and as we head out west, the self, often described for you as muse, inner beloved, guide to soul, the subpersonality is the shadow and the shadow selves. You know, we hear a lot about that word, the shadow, especially when people are talking about doing inner work. Can you share from your perspective what that means and how it can protect us?
Yes, I'm using basically a Jungian approach mm-hmm. to the meaning of shadow, and it's often actually misunderstood by most people today. We tend to think of the shadow parts of ourselves as those socially unacceptable mm-hmm. Ways of acting out that we're not particularly proud of and we want to hide from others. But that's actually not at all what Jung meant by shadow. What he means and what I mean by shadow are the parts of ourselves we actually don't know anything about at all. And if anybody accused us of these aspects of our psyche, we would deny them sincerely. We just really don't know they're there.
Yeah.
So these are aspects of ourselves, and these are often, Richard, aspects of our wholeness, our original human wholeness, that were unacceptable to our families when we were young. And so, and in fact, it's the loyal soldiers when we're very young who kind of are holding shovels, and they're shoveling up any parts of ourselves that are unacceptable to our families and our culture, and they're throwing them, those parts of ourselves, into a dark dungeon kind of place where we won't be aware of it and we're not likely to act on those parts. And that dark, unknown place is, again, what we mean by shadow.
Okay. We're talking about the wild mind today on The Richard Brendon Show with the help of best-selling author, depth psychologist, and wilderness guide, Bill Plotkin. It's the title of his new book. We'll have much more, but first, a word from our sponsor.
Wellness is an active process of becoming more aware and making better choices that move you in the direction of a more successful life. Choices to eat well, move well, and think well enable your body to live well. When your spine is aligned properly, your brain and body are connected. Stillpoint Family Chiropractic is a family wellness center where we focus on your lifestyle and the impact it has on your spine, brain, and your life. Find us on Facebook at Stillpoint Family Chiropractic, or our phone number is 317-863-0365.
This WICR program is underwritten in part by Georgetown Natural Foods Market, located at 4375 Georgetown Road on Indy's west side. They carry organic produce and bulk body care products such as shampoo, lotion, soaps, and shower gel. Their kitchen serves soup, sandwiches, hot entrees, and carryout food. Plus, they have a juice bar. Georgetown Natural Foods Market, located at 4375 Georgetown Road on Indy's west side. Their website is georgetownmarket.com.
Welcome back to the program. We're bringing love to life today with Bill Plotkin, and it's an honor to have him on today's program. I'm excited about his newest book, Wild Mind, A Field Guide to the Human Psyche. And Bill, when talking about the core messages of your book in the introduction, you say, the key to healing and to growing whole is not suppressing symptoms, eliminating wounds, or eradicating subpersonalities, but rather cultivating our wholeness, the horizontal wholeness of the self, as well as the vertical wholeness afforded by our relationships with soul and spirit. This is so different from how Western culture approaches healing, it seems like. You also talk about the synergistic relationship between cultivating personal wholeness and building life-enhancing cultures. Can you share more about this and why it is so vital?
Yeah, let's see, you got a couple pieces there. One angle is that Western psychotherapy grew out of a medical model in which the practitioner looks for symptoms, looks for things that have gone wrong, is needing to assess or diagnose illness or disease, and the natural goal is to reduce symptoms and eliminate disease. And I find this actually a very limited and limiting model of psychological development. So the alternative to attempting to eliminate symptoms is to, again, cultivate our wholeness. It's my understanding and my experience that many of the, maybe most of the psychological symptoms we have, the emotional problems we have, are not at all due to any kind of disease or illness, but due to the lack of the development of wholeness. When we haven't cultivated our indigenous human wholeness, we end up with all kinds of symptoms. And if we see a therapist or a psychiatrist who's going to use some approach, whether it's behavioral, emotional, or pharmacological, to eliminate our symptoms, we're not enhancing the psyche at all. We're not enhancing our wholeness, and those symptoms are going to show up in some other way soon enough. So again, the alternative, when we have emotional symptoms, we look at what the implications are for what aspects of wholeness need to be cultivated.
Mm-hmm.
And as we spoke of before, once we've made some had some success with cultivating our wholeness, then we can embrace our own wounded parts.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a second part of your question. Remind me?
Well, you talk about the synergistic relationship between cultivating wholeness and building life-enhancing cultures.
And yes.
Go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. Cultivating our human wholeness is foundational work in becoming what I call an authentic adult, which it's sad to say, I think authentic adults are actually very rare in the Western world today. Maybe 10 to 20% of Westerners ever reach true adulthood. So I should say a bit about what I mean by true adulthood, but where this is going is that in order to engender truly healthy, mature cultures, what we need are authentic adults and true elders. Again, even the elders being even more rare than the authentic adults. So what I mean by an authentic adult is it's someone who experiences himself first and foremost as a member of the more than human world, that is to say a member of the greater earth community, not just a member of a family or a town or a nation or even a species, but of the, as a participant in the greater human community. That's my reading of all healthy cultures around the world, most of which have been destroyed by the Western world over the last couple thousand years, but the ones that are still exist and that we can read about, all mature members of the culture experience themselves first and foremost as members of the greater Earth community and are also proud of being members of the particular tribe or culture that they're members of.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first part of the definition of an adult, a person who experiences themselves first and foremost as a member of the more-than-human world and has had one or more visionary or revelation, visionary experiences or revelations of their unique place in the more-than-human world. This is something that the contemporary Western culture would consider a mystical experience. A healthy culture would consider it just the kind of thing you go through on your way to adulthood, that you discover that that there's a particular kind of gift, song or dance, or quality, human quality, that you were born to bring to your people. And the way you bring it might be through some social role or a vocation, but you understand your vocation, your job, is just a way of delivering something, you might say it's mystical or of nature, something that, for example, the contemporary British-American poet David White refers to the truth at the center of the image we were born with. This is a very wild idea for most Western people, that we're each born with an image, a very rich, profound symbol, you could say, and there's a truth at the center of that. We're born with it. It's before we even have language. We, as we're born, our psyches has this image at its center. And the process of initiation into adulthood, it's a process of many months or years, we, among other things, we discover what this image is and what it, the truth at the center of it is. So adult is, among other things, is a person who's had, on the way to adulthood, a visionary experience of their unique place in the world, and they're embodying it. They're performing it for other people to see. And that's where healthy culture comes from.
Yeah.
That's my understanding. That's where it originally comes from. That's where it's going to come from now in the Western world as we develop healthy cultures. It's going to come from initiated adults, in the sense I was just speaking, who have this mystical relationship with the world, understand what they were born to be, is a better way to say it, and they have particular ways of doing that or performing it. And each adult, when doing that, is creating some new social form or new cultural resource, new way of doing business or religion or education, etc.
Yes.
And when there's enough of those true adults around performing their vision for their people to see, what you get is a healthy culture.
Yes. Bill, do you find that in your travels that you're finding more and more people in Western cultures craving for those mystical experiences?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think all humans at all times, in all places, in all cultures have a longing to have a life that's meaningful. I guess that's pretty obvious. And a life in where they feel they're contributing and participating to the work with the world. But at times like this, and you could say the last 30 years, or you could say the last 100 years, some would say the last couple thousand years or more, there's so many people who have been living unfulfilled lives that the longing is just immense. It's palpable. And the grief, too, is equally strong because of whether we consciously recognize it or not, there's a general sense that people have that there's something really, really wrong with the world, and that individual lives that people feel they're just not participating or contributing in a way that makes a difference. So as things get worse, this longing actually gets stronger. And some would say, and this has been my experience, there's more and more people, a greater percentage than there has been perhaps in many hundreds of years, alive now, who are recognizing that something needs to be done, and each person's life matters, and their life matters, and they're beginning to be able to hear again the call, what Joseph Campbell called the call to spiritual adventure, the call to stride, as Mary Oliver says, stride deeper and deeper into the world, determined to do the only thing you can do, determined to save the only life you can save. And by that life, she's talking about the life of our soul, the life of our deepest way of contributing to the world. Because that's where our true fulfillment comes from. So obvious to say, our fulfillment doesn't come by having lots of money and lots of stuff. It comes from serving the world in a way that is deeply fulfilling for us individually to do.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Richard Brendon Show. It's a joy to have best-selling author Bill Plotkin on today. We're having conversation about his new fascinating book, Wild Mind, A Field Guide to the Human Psyche. We'll have much more of this conversation right after another word from our sponsors.
Goddess Mountain Naturals crafts quality salves and balms intended to aid in healing and rejuvenation of the skin and body through properties provided by nature. The various salves help to moisturize your skin, soothe itching caused by bug bites and poison ivy. These salves have been found to ease pain from sore muscles and tendons and aid in the healing of cuts and scrapes. These are remedies that have been used for thousands of years. For more information, you can visit www.goddessmountain.com. That's goddessmountain.com.
Richard Brendon, Bringing Love to Life, is underwritten in part by Natural Awakenings magazine. Each month, Natural Awakenings takes a practical look at the latest natural approaches to nutrition, fitness, creative expression, personal growth, and sustainable living. The magazine also covers the products and services that support a healthy lifestyle. Natural Awakenings magazine is a free publication and can be found at most healthy lifestyle outlets. Their website is awakenindy.com.
Welcome back to the program. I'm Richard Brendan. Bill Plotkin is my guest. We're talking about his book, Wild Mind, A Field Guide to the Human Psyche. Bill, in your book, you write, a large percentage of people in the Western world seem to be at the mercy of how their subpersonalities react to their circumstances. I think this is so true. You then talk about how this can change as we cultivate our ability to observe and act from the self. You say, when our ego is identified with the self, we have multiple behavioral options. You then talk about a 3D ego. Can you explain the concept of the 3D ego and why it's a good place to be anchored?
A three-dimensional ego is one that has access to these three dimensions of our human wholeness. And mostly what we've been speaking about so far on this show is the horizontal dimension of our wholeness. And again, this is what I refer to as the four facets of our wholeness, which again are mapped on the four cardinal directions, which is also the same as the qualities of the four seasons and actually the four times a day, too. Four times a day being sunrise, noon, and sunset, and middle of the night. So, the three-dimensional ego is one that has conscious access to these four facets of our wholeness that we've been speaking about in this program. But it also has access to the vertical dimension of our wholeness. So the nature-based map of the psyche, which is the subject of this new book, Wild Mind, is actually mapped on the seven pan-human or cross-cultural directions. In addition to the four cardinal directions in the horizontal plane, there's the upper direction, and then there's the lower, the direction of below, and then there's the center. So the upper direction, which many cultures refer to as the upper world, it's something like what we call heaven, but not really in the mainstream Christian sense. The upper world is a place of what people might call spirit, or the non-dual, or the divine, or God. And each one of us humans has potential access to a what you might call a realm of consciousness or a state of consciousness in which we experience our own individual consciousness or ego as one with the greater consciousness of the cosmos or of the divine. And so this is one half of the spiritual capacity or opportunity that we each have. The journey upward, the journey of ascent, the spiritual journey of ascent to this experience of oneness or union with all of life. But the other half of the spiritual journey, which has been suppressed in the Western world for thousands of years and it's hardly ever even spoken of, I call it the journey of descent or the journey to soul. And by soul, I mean the aspect of our psyches that is most unique, whereas spirit, the upper world, is what's most universal. But by soul, I don't mean our personality uniqueness, like our personal style, the way we dress, and so forth, but rather something that's much, much deeper than personality. It's this mystical, again, one way to speak about it is the truth at the center of the image we were born with. Oh. Or another phrase from poet David White is the seed that waits, or sorry, the shape that waits in the seed of us to grow and spread its branches against a future sky.
Yes.
It's this thing that's of nature and of mystery, but it's very unique for each one of us. So a three-dimensional ego has had some experience of its soul in that sense and of spirit in the sense of the oneness or the non-dual, and also has conscious access to the four facets of our horizontal self.
You know, we like to say on this program that each week we're bringing love to life one broadcast at a time. And in the beginning of the section where you start to talk about the self, Bill, you talk about love and you write, all four facets of the self begin with love, are anchored in love, yet each facet features its own favored form of love. Can you talk about each facet's favored form of love?
Yes, thanks for asking. The north facet, which I call the nurturing generative adult, has a form of love that's caregiving. It's you could think of it as a healthy parent, mm-hmm. kind of loving, caring for the personal development of others and, of course, of ourselves as well, and also wanting to sustain life in our greater world and ideally even enhance life. So this nurturing generative adult loves the world in such a way that not only do we want to do whatever we can to stop the life-degrading features of contemporary societies, but also create cultural forums that allow us to not only sustain life, but enhance life of all species of the world. So that's, say, it's kind of a parent-like or a mature adult form of loving. Then the East form of loving, that's the facet of the self I call the innocent / sage, the innocent sage. It has this kind of spiritual loving from a place of wisdom and really big picture, and it can support others and ourselves to sometimes go through really difficult experiences that we know will help grow us. It's because the East takes this really big kind of spiritual love, kind of like the way one would hope to be loved by a spiritual teacher.
Yes.
Exactly, yeah. So, and then the South facet, that's our wild indigenous one, which is very emotional, embodied, relational to all things and species and people. And it's also erotic in the sexual sense. So the South love is that aspect of Eros, which is embodied, somatic, sexual. And so this self facet of our self holds our healthy sexual impulses and capacities, which, of course, have been tweaked and diminished in all kinds of ways by our contemporary culture.
Yeah.
But it's our healthy sexuality, among other things, in the South, that form of loving. And in the West is the true romantic of ourselves. I call it the muse beloved. Sometimes we also call it the inner man or woman, or the complementary gender, that is, mm-hmm. or the mm-hmm. the magician of ourselves, or the Jungians would call it the anima or the animus. This aspect of ourselves has that deep, kind of dark allurement of things, the kind of loving which we want to penetrate to the depths of others or even to our own psyche. In the contemporary Western world, we've tended to confuse or conflate romance with sexuality. They're two different forms of loving, and they're equally valued and essential to a human life, but we tend to confuse them. And the stereotype is that women are primarily attracted by romance and men by sexuality. That's a terrible stereotype, but we often see that in our literature and so on.
Yes.
But the importance is that there are two different aspects of loving, and actually to a healthy relationship with a primary partner in life, we have all four aspects of loving, central to the full human experience of love.
Yeah. I'm Richard Brendan. My guest today is Bill Plotkin. He's best-selling author, depth psychologist. We're talking about his newest book, Wild Mind. It's a field guide to the human psyche. We'll have more of our conversation, but first, here's a short break.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the program. It's just such a joy to have Bill Plotkin on today. We're talking about his newest book. It's a great read, Wild Mind, A Field Guide to the Human Psyche. And Bill, I love the section where you talk about embracing wholeness. You talk about embracing each trait or characteristic of individuals as part of what makes them who they are, even the troubling ones, such as violence, hatred, or greed. And you write, by embracing people in their wholeness, we create the conditions within which they can change or mature. This is challenging for many because judgments step in, yet it's such a critical step to healing. Can you talk more about the concept of embracing wholeness?
It's a recognition that every human has a capacity for wholeness. And when people act in ways that are troubling, even violent, we can come to recognize that this is some aspect of their woundedness mm-hmm. that's being acted out. And even their wounded parts have absolutely legitimate emotions and needs and so forth. Now, of course, I hope it goes without saying, I'm going to say it anyway, that this is in no way a reason to condone violence
yes.
of any sort.
Right.
So that if we take the bigger picture, like the one that the innocent sage in the East would take, we say that really any aspect of our wholeness would take, we say, well, the primary thing is to protect life and enhance life. And if someone is acting in a violent way, the worst case scenario is that we need to constrain them in some way, hopefully not have to murder them, but constrain them in some way in order to enhance the life in the greatest way. But most of us, of course, aren't confronted by murderers every day. Of course, there's some places in the world where a lot of people are. But most of us confront people who are acting out their woundedness in such a way. And if it's safe enough to do, and we're able to see that person and see them in their wholeness, even if they're not acting it, even if they're not conscious of it themselves,
mm-hmm.
We create a field, so to speak, in which there's the potential for that person to grow at least one step at a time toward their own wholeness.
Mm.
So, how did I do? Did I answer that question?
Well, and that is huge, and it really requires each one of us to be doing our own inner work, doesn't it? Taking responsibility for that.
That's it, and it's very fulfilling to do this inner work. But I do disagree with those people who would say, you know, we've got to do all our inner work and complete our whole healing process before we can be of any help to anyone else. And that's going too far, too.
Yeah.
The part of becoming whole, one of the best things we can do to become more whole and more mature is to participate in the world in any way we can that,
yes.
that serves the world.
Yes.
And that enhances our wholeness and helps us be in relationship to our own woundedness as much as anything. So it's really doing both things simultaneously.
Yes.
Cultivating our wholeness and serving the world in any way we can.
Yeah, thank you for making that point, because really, we're never completing anything. It's always ever unfolding and evolving.
I believe it is, and I actually have to say that I don't feel where anyone is ever done healing their wounds. It,
mm-hmm.
It's just that there's more to life than healing our wounds. It's an essential thing to do, especially earlier in our life, and whenever our woundedness comes up, but there's so much else to do. And in terms of our optimizing our human fulfillment and our participation in the world, we have the opportunity and really the responsibility to be serving the world toward the enhancement of life.
Yeah, and just we have a few minutes left. Can you just share briefly the four practices for self-healing? It's in the appendix to your book.
Well, it's actually, four sets of practices. Mm-hmm. Quite a few. Geez, I don't know.
What would be a couple that you could share with our listeners?
The thing we specialize at our institute, that's Animas Valley Institute in
yes.
Southwest Colorado, is healing practices that are nature-based.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, people might go out on the land and be open to aspects of the land that resonate with their own, say, their own inner critic, and to learn to be in dialogue with those aspects. aspects and to learn to be grateful for their own inner critics and so forth. Or there are practices where we go out and essentially we court the world or romance the world through through poetry and speaking out our longing. And it is so many different kinds of things and that the reader will find in the book, that these are practices for both cultivating a wholeness and also being in relationship to our wounded parts. An example of working with our emotional wounds is that we might go for a walk with our consciousness open to finding something on the land that feels wounded or seems wounded. It doesn't have to be literally wounded. It, for example, could be an abandoned animal hole in the ground somewhere, or a hole in a tree trunk, something that just happens to feel wounded to that particular person. And then there's an elaborate practice that's part of it, which is to speak to that wounded thing about one's own woundedness and about the way in which that thing on the land seems wounded, and then to surround, it's actually several steps of that, but after the individual's consciousness has shifted into this kind of conversation with woundedness, both his own and the world, then we do a practice of filling this one's psychological space out there on the land, filling the space with a question that we don't try to answer. We just fill the space with a question. And an example of a question that we might use is, how does my wound provide me with a kind of healthy spiritual power? And implicit in that question is that at the heart of our deepest wounds, there is some treasure actually waiting there. And it takes a certain kind of matureness or wholeness in an individual to have gathered the kinds of psychological resources that enable a person to go right into the very heart of their deepest wound, which is what most people actually want to avoid, those really deep wounds.
Yes, it is.
But when we're ready, when we have enough maturity, we can go right into the heart of our deepest wound. And what we find is not only surprising, it's a revelation, and it's actually a great gift of what's waiting for us there.
Mm. Bill Plotkin, for more information about the work that you're doing and also the work of the Animas Valley Institute, of which you're the founder, do you want to use the wildmindbook.com web address?
That's a good one. Uh-huh. And also also the address animas.org. Uh-huh. Our institute here in Southwest Colorado is Animas Valley Institute. Animas is a Spanish word, more properly pronounced animas.
Animas.
And it is Spanish for souls, plural. Uh-huh. And it's spelled A-N-I-M-A-S. I emphasize the A-S because some people think it's U-S, but it's Animas, A-N-I-M-A-S.org.
Bill Plotkin, thank you so much for sharing your time with us today. I've always enjoyed reading your books, and I'm excited about this new one.
Thank you, Richard. It's been a great pleasure and privilege to have this time with you and your listeners.
Blessings to you.
And to you. Thank you.
I do enjoy the books of Bill Plotkin. And now here is one of my favorite songs from social change artist Peter Mayer, Holy Now.
When I was a boy each week, on Sunday we would go to church and pay attention to the priest. He would read the holy word and consecrate the holy bread, and everyone would kneel and bow. Today the only difference is everything is holy now. Everything, everything, everything is holy now. And when I was in Sunday school, we would learn about the time Moses split the sea in two, and Jesus made the water wine. And I remember feeling sad, miracles don't happen still. Now I can't keep track, 'cause everything's a miracle. Everything, everything, everything's a miracle. Why, from always hear it all. So the challenging thing becomes not to look for miracles, but finding where there isn't one. When holy water was rare at best, it barely wet my fingertips. But now I have to hold my breath like I'm swimming in a sea of it. To be a world half there, heaven's second rate hand me down, but I walk it with a reverent air, 'cause everything is holy now. Testament, that'd be very hard to say. See another new morning come, say it's not a sacrament. I tell you that it can't be done. This morning outside I stood, saw a little red-winged bird shining like a burning bush and singing like a scripture verse. It made me want to bow my head. I remember when church let out, how things have changed since then. Everything is holy now. It used to be a world half there, heaven's second rate hand me down, but I walk it with a reverent air, 'cause everything is holy now.
I just love that quote from Bill Plotkin. He says, "We must dare again to dream the impossible and to romance the world, to feel and honor our kinship with all species and habitats, to embrace the troubling wisdom of paradox, and to shape ourselves into visionaries with the artistry to revitalize our enchanted and endangered world." Hoo-ah! On that note, that's today's program. Our website, richardbrendon.org. Reminder that all shows are podcast on the site. And so for engineer Aaron Duvall and production coordinator Angel Richardson, I'm Richard Brendon. We're bringing love to life, one broadcast at a time.